it was planned that Vikram Vissanta should chair this session. However, he couldn't come, so that's why I'm here. I don't think I need to introduce anything. Leslie Coley would like to speak about self-regulation or regulation development in UK. So, Leslie, please go ahead.
We've got 35 minutes for this session, just in case you think I'm overrunning. Okay. Hi, everybody. I think I know most of you in the room, but for those I haven't met, I'm Leslie Carolly, and I'm the CEO of Nominet.uk. As Andre said, this presentation is about regulation and self-regulation within the UK, but I don't want you to give to get the impression that's all we do. So I'm pleased to say this week we signed .uk. So there are other things going on apart from this. Anyway, this presentation is about how we became the subject of government attention, and as a result of that, a bill that is currently going through the UK Parliament called the Digital Economy Bill. It's about some reforms to our constitution, and it's also about how we engaged with our registrars to effect changes to our constitution. And I think there are some learnings there that we can share with you. Apparently, there's a Chinese proverb which says, may you come to the attention of people in high places. I'm not sure how that translates. But we certainly came to the attention of people in high places recently. And back starting in 2005, we had several unsuccessful attempts at reform within Nominet. As a result of that, the government wrote to us to, in effect, suggest an independent review. That review was published in 2009. And following the recommendations of that review, we developed proposals that we consulted on during 2009. And this all culminated in what we called an extraordinary general meeting in February, just last month. At the same time, the Digital Britain report, a government report, stated the intention to get the reserve powers to intervene in the domain name system in the UK. And as I said earlier, that's currently going through Parliament. In fact, the bill was in our House of Lords just yesterday. I've put a lot of text up on this slide because I know that this will be of extreme interest to a lot of lawyers in the community. And I've put some detail in the other slides. I'm not going to speak to all of the detail, but it's there if anyone wishes to refer to it later. But basically, for the UK, the Digital Economy Bill was looking at television, looking at radio, looking at online copyright infringement, the classification of video games, and buried in all of that was also several paragraphs on the domain name system. Importantly, the domain name system bit said that the Secretary of State could intervene in domain names. It extended the role of Ofcom, which is our regulator, too. The report then turned into a bill. That's how legislation works, very briefly, in the UK. And there are some very specific clauses in the bill where the government, in effect, is seeking some reserve powers. And I have provided the detail on the slides. I'm not going to talk through the detail, but it's there if anyone would wish to refer it. But my abridged version of this is that if they decide to do so, there can be a report prepared. And it's important to realise that that report covers the domain name industry in its entirety, not just the registry. So it covers registrants, registrars, and the registry. Not just the registry. And the concept introduced in the bill, that if there is some sort of serious failure, then the government have the power to appoint a manager of the registry. They also have the power, if there is a failure, to alter the constitution of the registry itself. So those are some quite severe powers. They would not be introduced without necessary consultation and reports, etc. But our regulators see this really as if there are some sort of serious failures, that they have the tools by which they could step in and intervene in some way. Linked to the bill, there were a number of fact sheets published, and I've put some of the extracts from those fact sheets up there for you, because I think some of the phrases there are very relevant to a number of us in this industry. And in effect, the first fact sheet, there were two, the very first fact sheet is about providing additional information and voices the UK dedication to self-regulation and stresses that there are no current government plans to intervene, but does lay out the need for some sort of safety net and what that might be used for. And there was a second fact sheet that was also produced partway through the process, and that highlighted some very strong government confidence in the current management of the registry, which if you're a registry manager, that's rather nice to have, obviously. And it also laid out some examples of where the UK government thinks self-regulation is currently working well. A number of you will have seen the activity we did just before Christmas on counterfeit goods and domain names used with counterfeit goods. And I'm speaking on that in a session tomorrow. We also have a phishing lock, and we have the well-established dispute resolution service. And those were considered to be examples of where the government believes self-regulation is working well. So that's the kind of backdrop, the context during which we were trying to effect these constitutional changes. And there were a very complex set of changes being considered. As you're aware, previous attempts to change our constitution had not all succeeded. Some had, but not all. We also had a very low turnout of registrars, our members now within the UK. Those are, in effect, one and the same thing. We have 3,000 registrars in the UK, which I know is probably much more than many of you. And there became, over many years, a real issue that many were happy with the work we were doing and therefore just viewed us as a supplier. So they felt, they didn't feel a strong need to be very involved and very engaged. There was also a subsection of our registrars, and still is, that did not trust the management or the board of the company. So, a small challenge. Basically, what we did, we developed a series of proposals through consultation, and then we consulted on what we were going to propose, so hopefully to surface any disagreement with the proposals. A key proposal for us was that Nominet should conduct our business for the public benefit. And that, in effect, is how Nominet has always conducted its business. But crucially, that wasn't part of our legal constitution. And in order to get that resolution through, we knew that we would need nearly 67% positive vote to succeed. We were proposing that in a number of different forms, and I can go into that in detail if anyone is particularly interested, but each of the different resolutions had different hurdles to effect. And the EGM the week before last, I'm pleased to say, passed all of those proposals, which was a major, major milestone for us. The second set of proposals was about changing the board of Nominet, which prior to this consisted of four elected directors from the registrar community and two executive directors. So these resolutions were about changing the board to add independent directors and more executive directors, and also updating things in line with corporate governance best practice. Those were passed too. In addition, we had a strange measure in our constitution that meant that prices were set in effect by the registrar community. I wouldn't recommend that provision, but that existed in our constitution and had for many years. And there was a proposal for that to change in order to let the board set registration and renewal fees. We also, lastly, had a proposal to try to have a next stage of this process to develop some ideas about how we could get more stakeholders involved in .UK policy particularly, but also in the general involvement. And those resolutions passed as well. To get those resolutions through for us, and at the bottom of this slide you'll see we actually increased the amount of participation from around about 16% to nearly 39%. And that took a lot of effort, that took a lot of time. And just some learning to share with you about how we did that. It was a long process with a lot of meetings and a lot of discussion. And in effect, we found that that was key towards engaging people in understanding why change was needed and hopefully supporting those changes. We also previously perhaps weren't very good at letting people respond to consultations. So a bit like ICANN consultations, really, you've got to be a real detail person to be able to respond. And sometimes responding can take you half a day, for example. So we found we had to make it much easier for people to say yes or no. We had to summarise our proposals on a whole number of different levels, providing detail for people who love detail, providing condensed versions, and providing executive summaries. We also did quite a lot of public relations activity, making sure that people were aware of the consultations, aware of the votes, and using Twitter, Facebook, etc., to raise awareness and engage in dialogue. And I know there are mixed views on social media within this community, but as a method for increasing the diversity of people who engage with you, I would strongly recommend that from this experience. We did videos. I think Gabby's going to put the videos on the shared resources page. I'm not saying they're fantastic videos, but they certainly were a good way of explaining the issues to people, and particularly for us, about having board members in front of our registrars explaining the issues and why it was important for them to get engaged. And finally, we had an in-house team who actually rang every single member of those 3,000 to encourage them to participate and to encourage them to vote. So a very big project for us. It had board-level leadership and board-level involvement at every stage, which was great. And I have a member of my board here today on the ICANN experience now that he has some spare time following this project. Happy to give further detail maybe to people who might be going through a similar experience. It's not one I'd strongly recommend, but clearly the need for change at Nominet was crucial for our future, and now that has taken place, I think we move into a new era. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Leslie. That was a very interesting presentation indeed. Congratulate you to the great development in your registry. Do we have any question for Leslie? I don't see anybody, so thank you very much. And the next presentation was planned to be from Jörg Schweiger, but I don't see him in the room. No, so then the next presentation is from Sigurd Springer, and he will speak about the development of technical development in .NL registry, about EPP and DNSSEC.
Good night. Mr. Vice Chair.
Good morning to you all.
Oh, it's me. I just wanted to... it's me here. Hello. I just wanted... Since we're among friends, it's Stieger's birthday today, so bear with him, please.
Well, thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, but we can see you.
Good morning to you all. My name is Stieger Springer. I'm working at the Dutch Registry, SIDN, and I'm responsible for marketing, communication, and new business.
You can't see the presentation on the screen. Is it planned? It's unplugged.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, I'm sorry. It's unplugged. And now it should be plugged. Here we are. So I would like to introduce you to two subjects that have been keeping us busy lately. And those subjects are the introduction of EPP in Holland and some update on DNSSEC. So, to start with, EPP and SIDN. SIDN is among the last large registries to switch to EPP. We've been working on it for almost a year now, and maybe even longer, but as I can recall, over a year. And we will make the switch on March 17. We will go live with over 1,900, almost 2,000 registrars that will make the transition to EPP. EPP is, of course, an important industry requirement and a major step towards a better customer satisfaction. So, as I said, meeting the needs of our registrar is a key objective of this project. It is also therefore that we wanted to stay as close as possible to the standards as possible, the EPP standards, of course. And as a result, all major processes have become paperless. As I said, 17 March is our big date, and interface and processes will be changed at the same time. So we are talking about a big bang scenario. If you look at the process we went through, we went really through an extensive and elaborative program to consult with our constituency, mainly the registrars, of course. We created a task force, and we consulted them over all the proposed changes we had for the processes at SIDN. They were quite useful, and we created a group of five registrars, giving an example of the mixture of our diverse field of registrars. That was very important to us because we also had to include the knowledge and the meaning of the smaller registrars. Let's say it like this. Down the process, we also created or asked a group of registrars to help us pre-test our software. This happened at the end of December. And, that went quite good, I must say. As you can imagine, during this whole process, communication played a vital role. Apart from consulting with the registrars, we held regional events to update them on upcoming changes, send out various mailings, and called almost all of them to urge them to go over to EPP. And finally, to make the transition as easy as possible, we supported the development of open source client apps, and we created the test environment well in advance for those third-party people developing client apps. And in the end, we also published a list of those clients to our registrars. So what's the status so far? Almost 90%, we had a survey at the beginning of January, almost 90% of our registrars were already aware of the upcoming release date in December. So they were aware of that. That sounds very good. And they even said they liked our communication efforts. So that's also good. And, as I mentioned, in December, our testing registrars also say, thumbs up, good job, you can start going live with this project. And even we had our loaded performance tests went very well. We really met our system requirements quite easily. So that's promising too. So we were confident all worked properly and announced the date for going live well in advance, giving also the registrars a good period of time to test the connections with SRDN. So that sounds all quite good, and actually it's all good as well, but in the same time we've noticed that communication with our registrars has proven quite difficult. We've been trying to reach them for at least 20 separate occasions, and what you see is that we are a week away from this live date, that still a number of them haven't tested our system. So we are again also in the end still urging them to go over to the EPP standard. But it's been very hard work for us, and it still is. So that may be something to take in consideration if you want to make this transition to EPP yourself. Communication is paramount, but it's no guarantee that everybody will listen. That's at least our experience. Then something on DNSSEC, implementation and adoption. You may have heard SADN will sign the zone just a month after the route has been signed. Main reason for this? Smaller risk of wrongly configured trust anchors. Then again, we will have a friends and family phase after that, where we will create a limited number of domains where people can test. This will be a manual process, maybe with a simple web interface, and we still haven't decided on the policy on whom and who will or can join this. One of the main obstacles, of course, of implementing DNSSEC is the adoption of the local internet community, and especially, of course, the registrars. As you all know, it's hard work to get DNSSEC over, and the value and the importance of DNSSEC is not really appreciated in our constituency. So what we do, we try to have a proactive approach and consult with our local internet community. We created, therefore, a platform called dnssec.nl. You can have a peek on it. It's also in English. And you can, try to learn and see what we are doing. There's a number of issues we are, of course, highlighting over there. We try to do, to show best practices from Holland, but also from abroad. And it's important also to mention that we are doing this with a number of important Dutch stakeholders. I name a few: NL Netlabs, PowerDNS, KPN, GovCert, and of course also the Ministry of Economic Affairs. What is the task of this platform? It's aimed at finding solutions for open issues that are blocking widespread DNSSEC deployment in the Netherlands. Well, the platform focuses on DNSSEC deployment for all the .nl CCTLD space, the Dutch ISP market, and the Dutch law, and for Dutch local internet community as stakeholders. We are also performing some research, and that's mostly, of course, with the technical community. Well-known parties as TNO and Servnet are joining us in this. And finally, of course, you're all known to a number of issues. We try to handle those issues ourselves in a way we feel comfortable with. We have more or less a company philosophy that, if possible, we would like to work with open source software. And we are working together with, for instance, Nominet and .sc, creating open source signer for DNSSEC. It's open DNSSEC. And what can I say about it? Other parties involved are NetLabs, for instance, Servnet again, SEDN, of course. Kirai is a consulting company from Sweden. What are these operational issues then? Well, we try to follow a careful approach with respect to the known and unknown issues. Of course, the key is to avoid problems arising. Then we have secure transfers. DDSEC transfers are an issue because during the transfer you need the key material both from the losing as from the gaining DNS operator in the storm. This requires some kind of collaboration between them, which might be or might cause troubles in the end. Last but not least, key rollovers. They could lead to wrongly configured systems, and we urge you also to look at our website, dnsec.nl, for some more information, where we have a mind map of all kind of risks concerning key rollovers. Well, as you might have seen, I'm not an expert on DNSSEC issues. I'm a marketing guy. I'm in new business. But, of course, DNSSEC is partially new business for us, and it's, in fact, also residing in our new business team. You may know Marcus Travaille, who is the expert in our team. He's also joining us this afternoon for the DNSSEC session with the CCNSO. What I would like to highlight is that you could have two approaches. A passive one, just enabling DNSSEC, and that's safe, but is it really effective? Or, and that's what we are doing, we are promoting this active, not pushing DNSSEC, but trying to stimulate DNSSEC adoption and offer tools and knowledge to registrars. That's a little bit what I wanted to say about DNSSEC and EPP. If you have questions, don't hesitate to ask. It might be that Roof is going to jump in if the technical level is too too detailed for me. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Oh, yes, thanks for the presentation. I just a small question. Since you are a business guy, I'm kind of wondering, what is your business plan for the DNSSEC deployment? Thank you.
Well, as you well know, getting a business case out of DNSSEC deployment is quite hard. We have also got some other interests, of course, and that is making the zone, the Dutch .nl zone, more safe and secure. So I think you can translate the business case into this kind of reasoning.
Actually, do you have any plan for raise the price for .nl domain names once the DNSSEC is deployed? You want
That's
to raise up the price?
No.
Not the intention. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? If not, I have one question for you. I wanted to ask you, do you have some time plan for the after what will happen after the friends and friendly phase? Do you have some plan to some full deployment? Of
not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. We are working on it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's all quite interactive.
Okay. No other questions? So thank you very much, and the session is closed. Thank
could
you.
You need to could you too. Thank Andre and Sigurd and Leslie, please? And could you all wish Sigurd a happy birthday for today? No, we're not singing. No, the CCNSO does not do songs. We are. Our next session is a brief update from the nominating committee. Wolfgang is joining us. Slides. Gabby, does Wolfgang have slides, apparently?
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you for a couple of minutes. My name is Wolfgang Kleinwächter. I'm chairing the 2010 Nomination Committee. And every year, a denomination committee, you know, has to select some members of the community to fill open positions, leadership positions in IKE in various bodies. The nomination committee was established in the reform process, I think in 2003, and it has the duty to send, or the right to send, 8 directors to the board, 3 members to the GNSO Council and the CNSO Council, and 5 members to the At-Large Advisory Committee. So that means half of the board members make their way to the decision-making table of the ICANN board via the nomination committee. Insofar, the nomination committee has indeed a very crucial role to play. And also at this moment, it's important to stress that the nomination committee works totally independent from the ICANN board. That means why we'll consult with the CEO. We do not accept any advice or recommendation from the CEO. We are interested in the perspective of the ICANN, existing ICANN board, but we make our decisions totally independent from the board. The nomination committee itself is populated by the various constituencies of ICANN. I think also the CNSO sends somebody to the nomination committee. We have 15 voting members. An interesting point is that the chair and the advisor to the chair and the associated chairs are non-voting members. That means I myself have no vote in the final decision-making. I steer the debate, so the decision-making power in the nomination committee is in the hands of the 15 voting members, which are delegated to the nomination committee by the ICANN constituencies. I think this is an important element which shows transparency, accountability, and democracy within the ICANN structures works. So what we have to do this year, we have 3 positions for the board, 1 position for the GNSO Council, 1 for the CNSO Council, and 2 for the At-Large Advisory Committee. The deadline for submission is April 2. We decided to do it April 2 and not April 1, so that people do not think this is just a joke. So it's very serious. So that means you one day, if you consider to send an SOI. SOI stands for a statement of interest. This is what you have to do if you want to apply for one of the leadership positions. That the, everything is on the NOMCOM website. And you have to fill in this SOI, so it's very simple. Additionally, you need 3 or 4 references, you know, from people who know you, who would just send another 1 page to the nomination committee and saying, you know, this is a good guy, I support his candidacy for one of the positions. So that means all the information is on the NOMCOM website. The decision will be made after the Brussels meeting. And then the people take their seat in the various boards and committees after the December meeting of the ICANN board. So as I said already, you know, we are working, you know, also on a different timeline. The time for a board director is 3 years. The time for a country code council member is also 3 years, while for the GNSO Council and the At-Large Advisory Committee is only 2 years. So this was the wisdom of the founders of the nomination committee, that they had these different timelines, and we just work on the basis of the bylaws. The selection criteria, this is important, are, you know, well known, and this skill is, you know, for all leadership positions in ICANN. The first criteria is you have to love the internet. And the second criteria, I always say, you have to love ICANN, but you have to be critical against ICANN. I invite in particular people who are not satisfied with ICANN, who say, okay, ICANN did not deliver this or that, because as long as they criticize from outside, This is useful, but very often not helpful. It's better if, as a critic of ICANN, you join the community, you take a leadership position, and then you try to improve it. So, and these are all the criteria which are also in our description, which constitutes the basis of our work. This is integrity, objectivity, intelligence, sound judgment, open mind, capacity for thoughtful group and decision making. And certainly you have to understand ICANN's mission. We are very interested to get people also from outside the traditional ICANN community, because ICANN needs fresh people. ICANN needs the next generation, the leaders of tomorrow. And in particular, the councils are a very good place where, you know, all the younger people can make their experiences. So, I think this is important. But however, you should not be a total outsider. You should understand what ICANN is if you apply. I think this is certainly a criteria, and then you should be ready to serve as a volunteer without compensation other than the reimbursement of certain expenses. This is also part of the ICANN culture, and you should be aware about this. There is a discussion, and probably there are some questions about compensation for directors, and I can certainly answer this question if this comes. And you should have ability to communicate in English. I'm very positive for geographical and language diversity within ICANN, and it was also mentioned in the survey that multilingualism in ICANN is an important issue, and documents should be available in various languages. So that means I encourage in particular people also from countries and regions where English is not the first language to apply, so because we need the different cultures in the ICANN community. However, it's very helpful if you can communicate in English. So that means this is, this coin has two sides. So that means to have diversity of language is important, but it's just a barrier for the day-to-day communication if you are not able to communicate at least basically in English. And insofar, you know, we have to look on both sides. We have to have the language diversity, but there should be also a basic knowledge to communicate in ICANN. Otherwise, you know, the efficiency of your collaboration within the ICANN bodies remains low. As I said already, you know, we have certain criteria for diversity. And I said this already, it's rather simple. Go to the NOMCOM website, send a statement of interest, an SOI, to us until April 2, and then it's done. And so far, this was my short statement. I have at the end two wishes, what I expect also from what you can do to help to improve ICANN and to help the nomination committee to make the right choices. Number one is if you could also send this message to your friends and colleagues so that you talk with people where you think this could be a good candidate. Encourage them that they should go to the NOMCOM website, should consider it. There are still 3 weeks to go. And the second point is, last year we had around 70 or something like that applications. So we have only, you know, 7 positions to fill. So a lot of people who apply will be frustrated after the final decision, because my personal experience, I was in 3 NOMCOM so far, is in the outreach phase. You have a lot of friends. Then after you make the decisions, you know, you lose a lot of friends because they are not selected. So this is part of the process. However, you know, if you apply for the first time, you will remain now in the pool for at least 3 years. So there is a box which you can click and say, do you accept to be considered to remain in the pool if you are not selected? And I think this is important. This is an application not only for this year, though this will continue. You will remain in the pool for at least 3 years, for 2011 and 12. And the final word is, it's a very confidential process. And this is also important to understand, that confidentially does not mean there's a conspiracy, that 15 people behind closed doors, you know, make a deal, you know, for some friends of them. This process is really very, very democratic and not predictable. And as I said, even I as a chair have no voting power. But why it's confidential? That's the idea, to protect the candidate. That means if you apply and will be not selected, nobody will know that you have been not selected. There's a huge difference between elections and selections. In the elections, you have an open campaign. You argue in favor of you, and then you risk to lose. But in the selection process, thanks to the confidentiality principle, the candidate is protected. That means nobody will know if you are not selected, and then you have two other chances for the years 2011 and 12. Chris, thank you very much, and I'm certainly available for questions.
Thank you. Oh, blimey. Thank you, Wolfgang. Any questions for the chair of the nominating committee? Okay, well, please join me in thanking Wolfgang.
Can I misuse this for another announcement?
No, because we're late. Did you want to talk about the summer school?
I wanted to say thank you for all the people who support the summer school, and the next one will be in March in Sao Paulo in 2 weeks and end of July in Germany.
Thank you, Wolfgang. That's not my fault. Right. Regional organisation updates. So we're looking for Keith Davidson, who's apparently a regional organisation, Peter Van Roster, Eric Eriate, and Eric Akumea. Yes, there is, Keith. Get up here. So we're going to have our presentations from the regional organisations. Then Kim has recovered sufficiently to be able to talk to us about IANA. And then we're going to have our presentation from our lunch sponsors. See you, Nick.
Yes, good morning. I want to do a quick update of AFTL, the activities since the last ICANN meeting. Yeah, next slide, please. Right. In terms of membership, we have had three more new members join AFTLD. We have two other members still in process. We've also increased the number of associate members from 2 to 5 since the last ICANN meeting. Next slide, please. Last Sunday, we had our AGM, and we had two retiring directors in the persons of Vicent Ngundi and Mohamed El Bashir, and they have been replaced by Joe Carrigo from Kenick and Alion Touare from .ml. Next slide, please. Well, activities since ICANN 36, we organized an initial registry operation course in Dakar for Francophone CCTLDs in Africa. We had 14 countries presented and 21 participants. Since last Monday, we started an IROC workshop here for English-speaking CCTLDs. We had 13 countries participate with a total of 22 participants. We also had our annual meeting on Sunday, 7 March. And on Monday, we signed an MOU with APNIC to cooperate in capacity building and other areas. Next slide, please. Planned activities AFTLD will be at the African Internet Community Meeting in Kigali to make presentations. We also plan to be in Brussels. In October, we're planning to do an advanced registry operation course in both for French and English countries in Abidjan. And we plan to be at the next ICANN meeting, the last ICANN meeting for the year. Next, please. Well, projects, we are still, we are almost about completing our new website. We plan to launch it here, but we haven't been able to do that. But hopefully within the next month it will be up. Our newsletter is almost ready. We'll publish it and send it to major lists. Membership drive, we continue to get other African countries who are not members of AFTLD to join. And also we have encouraged a lot of our members to join CCNSO. We also want to focus on strategic partnerships moving forward so we can be able to leverage on their core competence to be able to develop the organization. We also plan to start collating monthly statistics for African CCTLDs. As of now, we don't have those statistics, and pretty soon we're going to get all those things done. We're also working with the SSAC to develop the capacity for African CCTLDs in the region. Well, yes, we have revised the timeline for our strategic 5-year strategic plan. It's still in process. Hopefully, at the end of the year, we will be able to launch our first operational plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. And now, Eric. Or should we do it in a different order? Would that be easier? What?
Because Christina's uploading it to Adobe Connect, so we need to do it.
Okay, whatever. So, who's going next? APTLD. Okay. That would be Keith Davidson, I should imagine. Sorry about the hold-up, folks. Too many presentations from me this week, and the wrong one in the wrong place. I'm Keith Davidson, Vice Chair of APTLD, and will provide a report on what we've been up to. Our membership is currently 38 members from 72 possible CCTLDs in our region, 18 associate members, a total of 56. It would be fair to say that our last year has been a somewhat introspective year in many regards. We've spent a lot of time rethinking our strategy and so on. Having come through a history of quite a light membership in our region, Our main mission was to grow that membership, and our ambition was to get to more than half of the CCTLDs in the region. Having done that, we didn't necessarily have a second branch of strategy as to what to do when we achieved that membership. So the challenge has been to try and work forwards from there. We engaged a new general manager at the start of 2009 and lost him at the end of 2009. So we are currently going through a recruitment process. We held interviews in Kuala Lumpur last week at our just after our AGM, and we're in the final stages of attempting to identify our successful candidate. And I think, yeah, it's very hard to make progress in a regional organisation without a manager. At our AGM, we also had two new board members come on board. So the membership, I'll ensure that Gabby gets this presentation so that you can have a look at the CCTLDs who are now members. Over the year, we've continued our work in the area of IDNs for CCTLDs, and we, our members and as an organisation, we're very interested in the ongoing PDP. Meetings coming up. This year, we met in Malaysia last week, as I said. There is a scheduled meeting for Sri Lanka in June to try and coincide with the going on to the ICANN Brussels meeting, and then a meeting in Jordan, potentially September, October 2010, potentially on the way back from Vilnius IGF. We collaborate, as always, with our friendly sibling organisations, particularly in our region, but the fellow TLD organisations as well. And I think we're expanding our mandate, particularly in the area of the IGF, and APTLD board and some members are actively engaged in the Hong Kong regional IGF scheduled for June, and a potential Oceania Pacifica IGF at a date yet to be determined. We have one new initiative, and that's a disaster support fund with a number of disasters, geographical disasters in our region in the past year. It's brought to mind that particularly in some of the small island states that when disasters occur, it's very difficult to resurrect infrastructure and so on. So we're establishing a cash reserve and also a list of people who can provide some efforts to assist in moments of emergency, and providing technical support for rebuilding registry or infrastructure services. For more information, the website and secretariat addresses are there, or if you wish to raise something with me. Thank you.
Thanks, Keith. Any questions for Keith? Okay, so we'll move on to Peter and Cinda.
Hello. Good morning, everyone. My name is Peter van Rostem, I'm the General Manager for Centre. We are the European platform for CCTLDs. I'm going to give you a quick overview of our activities. As always, I think the intention of this type of session is that you get an idea of what we're doing, and then we can later on engage in a debate. So I'm not going to dive into too many details. First of all, and very important, we have a new board. I think three of my board members are here, Annabeth, Alberto, and Johanny, who is also our treasurer. Mathieu is here too, but he's attending the CAC meeting. And there's Sabine, who was stuck in a snowstorm somewhere over Zurich. I'm not sure about that. Centre as an organization operates, I mean, we are really a hands-on organization that provides workshops and platforms for its members to do the work, to exchange best practices. We do that online and offline. Online, we have a website with lots of content that is accessible to members. We have mailing lists. Offline, we have general assemblies and workshops. For the CCTLDs amongst you, if you're interested in attending any of those, even if you're not a center member, contact me. The newest workshop is the marketing workshop, which is has now which already took place two times, and it's becoming quite a standard in our activities calendar. We still have our ad hoc IGF working group, and we are thinking about an R&D working group to think beyond DNS things, ONS for instance. So as I mentioned, we have a board of five directors, which you saw the picture of. We just hired a new staff member, an Australian, who will be helping us with a support for the working group. I think that's an important characteristic.
What, you mean you're taking them back now after having shipped them out for so many years?
Yeah, well, that was a good experience. We participate in IGF together with the other regional organizations. We organized a workshop lost in non-ASCII translation on IDNs, obviously. We're planning to organize a workshop again in the IGF in Vilnius, as well together with the other regional organizations. On top of that, IGF has our full support to move on. As many of you will know, IGF is ending, is nearing the end of its term. It's very important, I think, for everybody involved that they can proceed like they're doing now. So we'll be sending out, again, a strong statement, not just to IGF and to the GAC, but also to the members, hoping that they will transfer that message to their national governments for the vote in the UN in New York in June. We had our 10th anniversary, which the highlight of which was a high-level dinner with European stakeholders, European Commissioner, parliamentarians, and permanent representatives in Brussels. We're going to repeat that exercise this year, right before our General Assembly in Brussels. Last year, I already mentioned, I think, on my previous briefing that we were going to produce a movie. Well, the movie is now done, and it's available on YouTube. You can all use it. What it basically does, it explains in layman's terms how DNS functions. I'm sure that it will give the techies amongst you a high blood pressure to watch it, because obviously you have to simplify the message when you're trying to explain something as complicated as DNS in 2 minutes' time. But have a look, and if you can use it, feel absolutely free. The next step is follow-up movies on particular aspects of DNS, such as DNSSEC. Yes, this is how screenshot. Just to give you an idea of what the center community is currently thinking about day and night, DNSSEC, escrow, service level agreements, pricing, dispute resolution, all things related to abuse, EPP interfaces, and governance models. So these are just the topics from the most recent surveys. I think it gives a clear idea of what's on our mind. Yes, there is our magazine, DomainWire, which you can download from the website and use parts of if that can be helpful. And for the ICANN meeting in Brussels, since we're based in Brussels, we'd be really thrilled to have you in our office. So please pay us a visit. Maybe not all at the same time, since our offices are rather modest. But I really would welcome you to our premises. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Any questions at all for Peter? All right. So, and now finally, Eric.
Thank you. Like part of the cooperation between Center and LACTLD, I will use the machine of Center. Thanks, Peter. I try to put a very quickly update. And
For those of you wondering, we're waiting for the presentation to be loaded up onto the Adobe Connect so that other people can see it remotely. And so far, no good. It's coming. Excellent.
Thank you. This is the first time that I cut in a presentation because it's not my language, the problem. Normally, I have problem with the English, but this time is technical problem. And LACTLD is created in 1998, so we have 12 years. We celebrate 12 years on the final of this year. We are based in Uruguay, but our offices are in Lima. We changed our bylaws the past year to accept affiliates. The affiliate needs to be TLDs in historical relation with Latin America. With that, we increased in the past year, and now we are 31 members. 24 are full members. The last one was IT. And 7 affiliates, and the last 3 was .es, Spain, .mobi, and .pt, de Portugal. We have our General Assembly normally in May, and the next will be in Curaçao, in Netherlands, Antilles, so you are invited. A quick update of the last things that happened to us was the situation, a special situation with the CCTLD.ishn in Honduras about the fact government tried to take the CCTLD, physically take the CCTLD. So LACTLD, like a regional organization, sent a letter to the international community about that. Normally when we're thinking in Latin America, we're thinking Spanish community, but also we have a big community that people that are speaking English, also in Portuguese, and French, and Dutch. So we need to start to include that community, especially in the Caribbean areas, and our staff talking English, French, Portuguese, and Spanish. We have 4 workshops this year: attack and contingency response program, legal and policies, technical, security issues, and finally about commercial aspects. We have support of ISOC and ICANN for the technical and security through Delta Risk. We started a Twitter. This is our direction. You can follow us. A Facebook, too. And the final of this month, we will have a new website. We need to bring more information to the community. And we had, in the past 45 days, 2 big earthquakes in the region, one in Haiti and another in Chile. In the first case, affected directly not only the operation of the CCTLD, affect the people. Some member of the staff lost families and relatives. So the community gives support technical to them, like with mirrors, in special Brazil, helping a lot of them, and Dominican Republic, that's the half part of the island where it's IT. And also we give support to them, in special for the people. Finally, the CCTLD is not only the technical aspect, it's more the staff and the people. And in the case of Chile, was biggest and strongest earthquake, but was more easy because they have some contingency program about earthquake. So no, was the technical issues a big deal, was more about the persons, was complication in the communication, but finally, 4 hours after the earthquake, we can make contact with them, and the community was informed about that. This year, we will continue with our newsletter, called it in the name of the domain. We have the possibility to put in paper like the another regional organization. We participate actively in CTEL, Inter-American Commission of Telecommunication, and also we will have relation with CTU, Caribbean Telecommunication Union, to have contact with the governments in the region. We have a fellowship program for each workshop to helping in special development countries to participate in our workshops. We have a monthly report of statistics with Latin American Project, and we started with LACNIC IPv6 deployment program to have IPv6 at the final of this year in all the CCTLDs in Latin America and Caribbean. We made a book, a reference book, about legal aspects, and we are working in policies, technical, and commercial issues. Our next workshop will be in 1 month in Dominican Republic. You are all invited. It's about attack and contingency response program, in special about how working against disasters, natural disasters. In May, we will have our policies and legal workshop with our General Assembly in Curaçao. In September, we will have a technical aspect workshop in Uruguay. And finally, a third commercial aspect workshop in the same place that I can meet in. At this moment, maybe appear that this seat will be in Cartagena. No more questions?
Any questions?
Yeah.
Yeah, come on.
Yes, Yang.kr, and also the co-chair of the Wildcards Study Group. I would just like, I was waiting for everyone to be done to first express my gratitude to Eric Yarte for his help in offering to inquire about the wildcard situation to the LACTLD members. And I would also like to ask ABTLD to reach out to its TLD that is engaging in wildcarding to provide us with more information. We are formally trying to enlist the help of the regional, our at least regional liaisons to help us gather information about individual CCs. And I know I know some of them are not members of your regional organizations, but I do see that, for example, the TK and the Samoa are members of ABTLD, so I would appreciate your help. Thank you.
No, I can't remember.
Thanks for the words, and I include Eduardo Santoyo, that is the new CCTLD.co general manager, just redelegated in the past month. Eduardo is there. He will help us in this, and maybe we'll be the host of the next ICANN meeting in Latin America.
Thanks, Eric. Anyone else? All right. Well, could you please thank all of our regional organizations? And now, somewhat late, 24 hours late, but nonetheless, still here with an IANA update. We have Kim.
You really should be glad I wasn't here 24 hours ago. It wouldn't have been pretty. So my apologies. I wasn't here to present yesterday. I had a bad run-in with some local food, but all is getting better. I am here to give you the update on IANA Root Zone Management, so hopefully I can touch on a few issues of interest to you, and as always, any questions will be fielded as you wish. So firstly, I wanted to update you on technical conformance testing that we're doing. For those that were in Mexico City last year, more or less exactly 1 year ago, we started rolling out a more refined set of technical tests for our TLD managers. And these are the tests that we do when we receive a change for the root zone. And what I did then was I presented some summary analysis of the amount of compliance against those technical checks that we do for the meeting. And since then, we've started monitoring against those new set of technical tests, and it includes a few additional things that we didn't do before, and we've also more routinely flagged some of those issues. So in the past, whereas we perhaps didn't check rigorously against all those criteria, now we check against all the tests and we inform TLD managers of issues when they make a root zone change. So just one measure of compliance is the amount of network diversity amongst ccTLDs, and this was the map that I showed in Mexico City as of 1 year ago, the amount of AS diversity, and don't blink, you might miss it, but I'll just transition to the next slide. This is it a year later. So there's been a couple of changes, and I think in the positive, but more or less the ones in red are the ones with no network diversity, and they're the ones of most concern. In effect, those TLDs are reliant on a single network operator, which if it had, you know, network difficulties, the entire TLD would go offline. So ideally we want to have TLDs in at least two diverse networks. Obviously more is better, but having it in just one is of somewhat concern. Just for comparison, this is what I presented last year in terms of network diversity over IPv6. It's really showing the same characteristics, although here we don't have a minimum requirement of two diverse IPv6 networks. We only apply that for IPv4, but nonetheless, I think it gives a useful illustration of network diversity under IPv6. So again, this slide here is last year, and I'll flip it right now to this year. So I would say that for those few that have changed, almost all have just slightly improved in terms of network diversity, and I'd say the notable exception there is Russia, and I don't mean to point out Russia for any other reason than they're huge on the map, and it's pretty obvious, but they've gone from having one IPv6 name server to none. So they're effectively not visible. Their name servers aren't visible over IPv6. This is another graph I showed last year. I showed it up to 2009. It shows the progression of diversity over the previous 5 years up until 2009. And it showed, you know, a steady increase. And I just updated that with another year's worth of data. So you'll see there that IPv4 diversity has increased just a little. And both TLDs with any kind of IPv6 and TLDs with IPv6 and on diverse networks has also improved. So in terms of like the summary takeaway percentages that are probably the most useful way to look at this, these were the numbers I presented last year. We had TLDs with open recursive name servers, and just as a reminder, these are name servers that are vulnerable to a number of security attacks. Secondly, we have those without diverse IPv4 connectivity, those without diverse V6 connectivity, those without any V6, and finally TLDs with referrals that can fragment. And I won't go into too much detail because I know we're pressed on time, but more information on what those mean were in the Mexico City slide deck on the CCNSO website. But those were last year's figures, and let's just quickly look at this year's, 2010. This number is more concerning to me. We've had an actual increase in the number of TLDs with open recursive name servers, and that should be of concern because I would expect it to be going the other way. And I'm not quite sure why that is, but it deserves some follow-up and investigation. As I showed you on the maps and the graphs, these have improved. We now have only 34% of TLDs have no IPv6, and only 6.4% lack diversity of their IPv4 name servers. Finally, we've had a pretty large increase in the number of TLDs whose referrals can fragment. This is really an indication, I think, that TLDs are, in a sense, maturing. They're adding more name servers to provide better redundancy, and those name servers they have are adding more V6 glue. So it basically increases the response size that we see in the root zone. But nonetheless, that's somewhat of concern, and I think that over the next trimester, before the next ICANN meeting, I suspect we'll do some outreach on that to try and improve that number. Next topic I just wanted to update you on is the IDN Fast Track. So far, we've received 19 applications for string selection. That process is where you ask for a string to be accepted as a relevant representation of the country's name. Of those, only four have got through that process, and all four of those have since submitted applications to IANA to do the domain delegation process. One thing I wanted to highlight is there seems to be some confusion that there's actually two separate processes there. And I'll go into it in detail now, but some are not clear that there's actually two separate processes involved. So just to a little stick figure diagram, this is the process that we have today for not fast track, but for regular CCTLDs. So for your ASCII CCTLDs, this is what happens. The proposed sponsoring organization comes to IANA. It submits a bunch of supporting documentation to IANA, which the IANA then evaluates. Eligibility for a CCTLD comes from the ISO standard. So we take not only the qualifications of the sponsoring organization, but also eligibility through ISO. And in turn, you know, provided you meet the criteria, the sponsoring organization gets their top-level domain. So that's the current ASCII process. So what we've done for the IDN Fast Track is take that process and keep it. So we still have that process, although we don't have that eligibility from the ISO list anymore. The eligibility now derives from the Fast Track process. So we have this whole new process at the beginning called string evaluation. And during string evaluation, what happens is you have both the sponsoring organization, proposed sponsoring organization, and the government of the country coming to ICANN, and there they submit supporting documentation for the string. Perhaps it's not clear from this diagram, but that's different supporting documentation. But that supporting documentation shows that, you know, dot whatever is the correct way to represent that country's name in a certain script. In turn, ICANN, through a separate process, will come back with a string approval, which involves technical expertise and external consultants, who then come back and, you know, approve that string for delegation. But all that's happening in that process, that first process, is acceptance of that string as an appropriate representation of the country. It says nothing about the sponsoring organization as an appropriate operator of that domain. So that assessment then comes later. So what happens is now we go back to the original IANA process, but that sponsoring organization, with that approval from ICANN, adds it to the regular supporting documentation they would have already provided to IANA in terms of whether the sponsoring organization is appropriate, whether they have technical competence, operational competence, whether they have local internet community support, and so forth. So that's kind of a summary of the process. And, you know, looking at it a different way, and I'll just flip through this really quickly. These are the two phases. So just using a hypothetical example of Greece. Greece comes in the first phase and says, we want to use this string to represent Greece. That evaluation is performed by this new team at ICANN, and that's done with outside experts. That's done with specific eligibility criteria. It's a new process. It's a web form. And that takes a minimum of 2 weeks, but I guess based on the last few months' experience, it takes about 1 or 2 months. Then in phase two, you ask, can that string be delegated to a specific organization inserted to the root zone? That is the evaluation performed by IANA staff. That uses the standard criteria that we've used for years, standard root zone process, and that can take 3 or more months. So that's the longer process. I would say it's the much more substantial evaluation process. And to be clear, I think it's really important to highlight the two are assessing different aspects of the proposal. First phase is this the appropriate label, string, for that country? Second is this the appropriate operator for that domain? Next topic I'd like to briefly touch on is signing the root zone. This is the quick flow diagram, and I won't go into any real detail here except to say TLD operators that sign their zone submit their data to IANA. IANA submits it to DOC. DOC submits it to VeriSign. So it's exactly the same process that we have for regular root zone changes today. The difference is that once it's at VeriSign, VeriSign then signs the root zone, but it does so with a key that's been signed by ICANN. I don't know if there's been presentations on the differences between KSKs and ZSKs, but I won't go into details. I gave a presentation, actually two presentations about it this week already that go into some detail, and I can certainly point you to those if you're interested. I mean, in summary, right now we're rolling out DNSSEC signed root. This progressive rollout is going from January to the middle of this year. Until it's fully deployed, it's kind of in a state where we're exercising some of the problems that might occur, but it's not actually possible to validate against the signed root zone today, even though the root is signed today. The good thing is there's been no significant issues identified so far. Once we're satisfied mid-year that everything is going well, it will be finally implemented and it will be fully deployed. More information is available at rootdnssec.org. One thing, accepting the DS records from TLD operators, more or less the same process that you do with NS records today. TLD operators should deal with IANA in terms of maintaining DNSSEC. Final topic for today, who is data accuracy? You know, we often test the accuracy of the WHOIS data within the IANA root zone database. And it's not necessarily a scientific endeavor. It's more a case of we need to contact people, and it either works or it doesn't. And because it's a relatively small community of people we deal with, it's the 280 TLD operators, you know, we get a good sense of how many work, how many don't. We know which ones work and which ones don't. One thing we don't do, though, is we rarely have need to send physical mail to TLD managers. You know, we might call them, we might fax them, we might email them, but we never send you guys letters, we never send you any other kind of communication. So one thing that crossed our minds a couple of years ago was how do we verify the accuracy of some of these addresses? So we started doing this in 2007. We sent Christmas cards to all TLD operators. And we did it again last year just to try and check how many addresses worked and which ones didn't. And I would say that there's a bit better accuracy than last time. That's more or less anecdotal. But I just thought I'd share with you some of the issues we're facing. First one is we can't mail Georgia, and I'm just guessing that Georgia is also a state in the US, and I think the post office is just thoroughly confused right there.
Can I just make it clear, you mean the American post office is thoroughly confused right yes. there?
Right. These were dispatched from the USA, so yes, the US Postal Service, Tbilisi in Georgia, they're probably not that familiar with it. So I give them a free pass on that, but here, this is, I guess, the most concerning one to us, and it sort of shows, a real problem that we don't have a good handle on how to fix, which is here is a bunch of letters that were rejected by the U.S. Postal Service for legitimate countries. So if we just zoom in on what the country names are, you have Palestinian Territory, Timor-Leste, Christmas Island, Samoa, Guernsey. There was more, but the U.S. Postal Service doesn't recognize these as countries, and you know.
I wonder if Nigel's online by any chance. Nigel, if you're online and you haven't exploded yet.
Now, I'm certainly very interested in feedback on how we can get these delivered. One of the root zone management staff is actually Palestinian herself, and she suggested she's run into this problem with Palestine all the time. She always writes on her letters via Israel underneath Palestine and seems to get through that way. But, you know, maybe we need to do some more on improving the addresses so we don't have this problem. But finally, speaking of Israel, this was the most confounding response we got back. For some reason, Tokelau, we got a stamp back that it's not Israel, which I thought was pretty self-evident. But on that, thank you very much, and happy to take any questions.
Anyone got any questions for Kim? John, can we have a microphone? Thank you. What amazes me is that we haven't had complaints from people in those places that they haven't received your Christmas card.
I heard a very funny story from somebody that worked at Network Solutions when they first started charging for domain names, and apparently FedEx came up one day, backed a truck up to the office and said, "We can't deliver these things because we don't know what these two character codes mean." The question I had was, are you able to give us any indication when the first IDM CCTLDs may be delegated?
The answer is no, because the processing is confidential until they're approved. What I can say is the next board meeting where they possibly could be considered is April 22nd, plus or minus a few days, but I think it's 22nd. So the next possible date they could be approved is April 22nd.
Keith.
Kim, just a suggestion that may be useful for the Pacific Islands that you haven't been able to reach. New Zealand Postal Service does know where these islands are, so perhaps if you wanted to mail duplicates to us for on posting from within New Zealand, we could do that.
Thank you, Keith.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Andre.
I just wanted to ask you about the DS record submission. Did I understand it correctly that we will be able to submit your DS records before the route is signed, and we will have those records since the first day the route is signed?
Yeah, that's absolutely our intention.
Excellent.
I think on my more detailed presentation, we said that 1 to 2 months prior to our launch date, so probably around the May timeframe, we should have that available.
Excellent, thank you.
Thanks, Andre. Anyone else? Okay, so can we all please thank Kim? All right, now, thank you, Kim. We're almost done for the morning. We're going to have a presentation shortly from .cn if you'd like to get ready to do that. Gabby, can we deal with the logistics of tickets and where the...
Lunch.
You have to... how do people get there? Where is it? Do we know? Okay, so lunch is in a room called... I'm sorry. Why don't you use the microphone and you do it.
So lunch is in an area called the Delegates Lounge, and I think it's close to the staircase, and I have tickets. So it's first come, first served. So those of you who are nicest to me will get a ticket. Now, I will stand in the door at the end of this presentation, and Bart will stand in the other door, and we will hand out tickets.
Thank you. Excellent. Before we go to our CNNIC update, we're running a little bit early, and I just wanted to read you something. Yesterday afternoon in the joint board GAC session, the ICANN CEO, Rod Beckstrom, made a statement about security. And this is obviously very relevant in respect to our discussions with him yesterday about DNS cert. Now, I don't have a transcript. It's a quick note from the audio, not 100% word for word, but speed typed, so fairly accurate. So I'll read this out and then I send it out or whatever. Under the affirmation of commitment paragraphs 3 and 9.2, ICANN has a responsibility for the security of the domain name system. The DNS is under attack today as never before. I've contacted the top 20 CEOs of companies, and they confirm. The DNS is more fragile than it has ever been, and it could stop at any time. It's never stopped before, though the Kaminsky attack slowed it down. It could have fundamentally damaged the DNS, which is used more than 3 trillion times a day. Your economies depend on it. It could stop or it could be materially damaged. Parts of the system are in your countries. I will be writing to you, that's to the GAC members, asking what is happening. We are seeing new levels of wildcarding at the telecoms, synthesis of DNS operators providing false information. But the system is under severe attack. As CEO of ICANN, I met with heads of security from the 3 largest countries in the world, and they are concerned. I am concerned in sharing this because we need your help. We'll be looking for your information and advice on your certs and what is going on. I have experience with certs in several countries, but we need to learn more. I wanted to express my concern to the GAC now, because I don't want to wait until Brussels. So, I'm not really quite sure what to say after that, but Rolf, you've got your hand up, so you
Well, it's just because last time I checked, we would qualify as one of the 20 largest registries.
No, he's not. He didn't mean the 20 largest registries, Rolf. He meant the 20 top companies in the world. Nothing to do with nothing to do with DNS.
Okay.
Leslie.
This is an attempt at humour. Nominet is quite an active member of a number of business organisations within the UK, and indeed I'm a member of a CEO's group in the UK, so I probably know some of these top 20 CEOs, and I would be rather surprised if they knew what the DNS was, let alone had had developed concerns. On a more serious note, I most strongly feel that language and approaches like this are very serious and particularly unhelpful to the development of constructive dialogue on this area. I would go so far to say that they almost feel like scaremongering.
I agree. Hang on, I know there's a list of people, just hold fire. I agree. I think, I mean, I don't know what you do, Leslie, Rolf, others. I mean, we are incredibly careful when we're talking about this stuff at home. Incredibly careful not to instill concern where it shouldn't be, you know, it shouldn't be. The concept that you would scaremonger for the sake of getting your own way, maybe I'm being unfair, but it seems a little like that, is extraordinary. Dimitri.
Yes, thank you. Just a small remark. If I understood correctly, you mentioned that 20 largest corporations in the world which ignore DNS. It's very simple. I know personally, as I work for one of these companies, we simply outsource all network activity out of the companies, and nobody cares. It's operators who serve the network infrastructure for these companies.
Yes,
who are responsible.
But we're not talking about... Yes, all right. Rolf? He's
talking about IBM. May I suggest that we come up with a reaction from the CCNSO?
Sorry, say again, Rolf, I'm sorry.
May I suggest that we draw up a reaction to this statement from the CCNSO?
Yeah, I mean, maybe we should... Yuri, and then Calvin.
Yes, at this ICANN is a lot of discussion about the DNS cert.
Yes.
And creating like own DNS cert. So in this, if it's serious, really serious, if we want quick actions, we need to contact professional cert.
Yuri, I understand completely, but this is not, we're not talking about... This is not a discussion about DNS cert. This is a discussion about language being used to scare or to imply, rather, that the DNS is in imminent danger of breaking. It's got nothing to do with whether you believe you're in favor of DNS cert or you're not. Okay, so it's just about the language that's being used. All right?
Too strong.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Calvin. And then Mathieu. Calvin was first, then Mathieu.
Yeah, I would have to label that language as untrue and irresponsible almost.
Say again, Calvin, sorry.
I would have to label that as untrue and irresponsible.
Yeah. Yeah. And Mathieu.
Thank you, Asik. It's a very... it's a very strong concern for our community. And I'm, from what I gather, I don't think the CCTLD community is really what Rod would consider as the most resilient part of the DNS infrastructure, and therefore I believe it's important that we demonstrate that we are involved in this and that we care about this statement. But if a comment has to be made, we must make sure not to appear as denying whatever situation there is, but rather to urge ICANN or its CEO to share with the community whatever facts are behind these rather strong assessments, because we're all involved and we're all concerned by this.
Okay, I agree with that. Stephen? Can I just, before you say something, if we're headed towards the possibility, and I put it no higher than that at the moment, the possibility of making a comment, of sending something out saying we're concerned, we seem to be sort of heading in that direction. Paul, can you keep notes, because you're going to get the job of drafting something this afternoon. Thank you. Stephen.
I think his choice of language is simply appalling. I would like to point out that his choice of language may well be due to cultural issue, given that he's American and my government for the last 9 years has used this approach of fear and harsh language to browbeat. So I think it's a failure for this community, though.
Thank you. I've got Youngham, and then there was a hand up over the... Got you.
Just a request to have the text available.
I'm going to send it out now.
Thank you.
I'm just sending it out, right? I'm not putting any comment or doing anything. It's just coming out as I got it. So, Jörg, and then Leslie. Thank you.
He's a nutcase. Well, I just want to express my concern about the language and just... I think this is really calling out for regulation, and I don't like that at all.
Okay. Leslie?
But trying to be more constructive, this may actually be an opportunity for a number of things. This may be an opportunity for some factual information to be provided to your GAC representative if they do not have that already. And an opportunity for some public relations activity about how the industry in your country is being responsible and responsive to the many threats that exist. So I say it could be an opportunity, not just within the ICANN community, but within your own country to raise profile and to actually explain how seriously we take this issue and how much is invested in each of our infrastructures and continues we continue to make that level of investment.
Thank you, Leslie. Anyone else? Okay, so I've sent it out. What I suggest we do is that we get Paul to draft something. We'll, a couple of us will have a look at it just to knock it into some shape, and then... Sorry, Paul, that implied that your drafting would be rubbish. I apologise for that. And then we'll send it out to the list and see if we can agree that we should send it off. Yes, Dottie?
It seems to me that it's important to focus on the word technical, because the engineers and the technical people always tell the truth because they see everything in black and white. And I think his lack of technical background is what causes him to be flamboyant about this. Mm. And we're really addressing the technical issues, so I think it's important to sort of wrap it around that issue.
Okay, thank you. Did you all speak? No, you did speak. Okay, all right. Well, thank you. We'll get something out to you as soon as we can. And let us now hear from our lunch sponsors, CNNIC.
Thank you, Chris. Well, I'd like to keep it quite short because everyone is dying for lunch, and I understand. Okay? This January, CNNIC released a new statistical report about the internet development situation in China. We'd like to share with you some infos about The left chart shows that currently our internet users in China has been 384 million, and the penetration rate is 28.9. A year ago the penetration rate is still below the average level. That's good news. And the broadband user takes up 90% of all the internet users. Last year, we have seen a very dynamic growth of mobile phone users. It accounts for almost two-thirds of all the internet users. And actually, due to the development of mobile internet, there comes some problems. As you can see, we take a WHOIS accuracy special operations. It's due to the big development of the internet mobile network. Because teenagers have got a mobile phone for each other, and they tend to access internet via their mobile device, and this gives a very big leap to the criminals. They took advantage of that and get some porn website to elicit the view page of the teenage internet users. Okay, so recently we have got a public exposure by our national media that some criminals take advantage of that and register domain names with fake WHOIS information to evade law enforcement's investigation. So we're under criticized from the public, and we take a special action to remedy that. What we have been recently doing is that for new registrants, the registrant should submit online application, and for existing registrants, they should send a photocopy of ID card or business license and CNIC will validate the WHOIS information against the materials on the WHOIS data. Due to the huge amount of work, we have just employed about 300 extra workers to work for this specific issue. Yeah, that's quite a lot of work. The progress is quite good, and after 2 months, over 60 domain names have been validated with WHOIS accuracy. And we identified 6,000 more with porn-related and get them suspended. And according to just released statistics, it says about over 130,000 personal website was suspended due to lack of the WHOIS information. But this is another issue, because the website audit is out of our scope. Okay. The last point about technical cooperation. We recently have quite active in this technical cooperations with our international partners. First is we set up the ISC and the CNIC joint lab to develop Band 10 software, and we just opened a new research lab with Cisco on the addressing research, and we held a DNS org meeting this last November, and it turns out I guess that's all. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks, Elling. Are there any questions? Mathieu?
Thanks for this presentation. There's different skills
on some issues between CNNIC and other parties, I guess. My question would be, what's the impact on your new registrations of these new rules? Are you seeing any lower rate of registrations, or is it flat? What is the impact?
Yes, the data is still, you know, is still preliminary, but things like the impact for the new registration is quite huge, and our current registration is kind of decrease, but I don't have an exact number right now.
Anyone else? Gentleman over there, behind you, Gemi.
Hi, my name is Nicolas Boutmy from INDOM. We are a French registrar, and we are accredited for .cn. And I was wondering if this new policy was only for a short amount of time, or will be applied for forever.
The special operation is just about 6 months, but the WHO's accuracy audit is going to be permanent.
Okay, so we will have still to send information regarding new registrants.
Yes, sure.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, well, we need to say thank you for the presentation and a very special thank you for lunch. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, lunch is now until 2. We're back in this room at 2 o'clock for the DNSSEC. Please be on time and see you then.